You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. I'm John and we have the first women's special of the season, first of hopefully a good few. And we are previewing the SWPL season that begins next Sunday, the 13th of August. And I'm delighted to be joined by regular Dave. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, all good, thanks, John. Good summer, we're ready to go back in with a vengeance.
Yeah, let's see if we can get better figures than last season. I think we were on a rise, but we wanted to go bigger. And we've got guy who loves to help us out a lot, and we thank him as always. Knows his stuff about women's football. Chris, welcome back, my friend.
I feel like I'm very much the B character in terms of people that have got experience in women's football that's got joining in the podcast. But it's, yeah, no worries at all, John. Glad to come on and to hype up the new season that is coming.
Well, if you're the B character, I must be like the Z-lister on this because my knowledge of women's football is nowhere near yours. But let's be honest, the three of us put together don't have anything compared to the other guests that we've got on. Former footballer, regular pundit, Emma Black. Emma, welcome back to SFF. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm very well. Good to be back. And I'm just actually buzzing and looking forward to the season ahead. I think it's been a long summer. Although the World Cup's been on, but you miss obviously domestic football. Of course you do.
Yeah, definitely. We'll cover the World Cup later, which is still sad that Scotland's not there. But yeah, don't want to relive that playoff.
No, absolutely
again.
Not.
yeah, so we'll obviously cover SWPL 1 in the season coming up. But we've got to, I know Dave and I and a couple of our guests were speaking about the last day of last season. But for you guys, you know, the events at Ibrox and events at Parkhead on that final day, if you had a script for, you know, dramatic ending, what happened probably would have been far-fetched.
It was, I don't know about you, Emma, but I was pretty exhausted because that last part of the season as well was pretty relentless. It was like game after game, midweek after midweek, and they get to the final day, can be decided in the last day of the season, all three sides technically still win it, and then it's kind of getting to those closing stages. I was at Ibrox on the final day of the season, and then Glasgow City score, and then you have like Glasgow City media team bodies clambering all over. You've got people who are obviously invested in Glasgow City going tonto behind you. Then you've got obviously the other side of that, the Rangers realising that European football's probably just set a right. And then the thing I never realised and never knew until maybe like 3 or 4 days later is what happened with the news filtering through at Celtic Park and the fact that Celtic thought they had done it. And then obviously it all broke down and it was all those scenes that was obviously did. That there is in social media. So yeah, one of those days where you kind of like, for all the effort you put in over the course of the season, it kind of makes all that effort like that little bit worth it to know that you were there and you understood everything that happened and the context behind it, and it made those sideways rain nights at Petershill Park and all those other places that you get to go to worth it. I think that's certainly how I felt about it, kind of as I was leaving Ibrox some point on that Sunday evening.
Yeah, I echo what Chris is saying. It was just, you couldn't have scripted it. John, there's no way you could have scripted it. I was part of the BBC media team and I was sent to Ibrox and he says, we're not sure if we're going to be filming sports scene here because whoever lifts the titles here is going to be here at Ibrox or across the road at Parkhead. So I was sitting in the gantry with all the media people and I was thinking, must have came to the 70th minute and I thought to myself, I'm not doing any filming after this game. There's no way. It's definitely going to Parkhead. And then, as you say, Glasgow City scored that fanatic goal at the end. And then it was all just jubilant scenes. And I just felt that at that stage in the game, Glasgow City then weren't going to throw it away. But then there was that little scare when Rangers had thought they'd scored, when it had, obviously, Lee Gibson had made a tremendous save. I think it came off the crossbar. And then there was Glasgow City were putting thrown bodies in the way to stop it getting in the goal. So, and I had a laptop in the gantry, so we were watching the Celtic game also. And it was funny, as you say, Chris, when I was watching it, you were looking at the sideline from the TV screens and Fran and his coaching staff thought they were winning it because they were celebrating running up and down the touchline, whereas they had no idea that there was no goal being scored at Ibrox. So, yeah, pretty fanatic, and yeah, it was something that you would never have scripted at the end of the season. But in terms of, I knew it was going to be between the top three, but not the last day of the season to have those dramatic scenes.
It was just incredible. I felt for poor Andy Barge at the Celtic game, because he was really in use of a goal at Ibrox, not realising it was very quickly chopped off, and it was an obvious chopped off goal, but I don't think they had the pictures from Ibrox coming through at the same time. Maybe lessons learned for future. But the fact that Fiona McIntyre's in a taxi heading to Parkhead with Mark Benstead, and then it's redirected. I don't know if it's the same impact as the helicopter has turned, but
I prefer the taxi, John. I think the taxi is so much
taxi safer.
Absolutely. The camera was in there as well, so I joked right previously beforehand. I was like, how's the trophy going to get to the places where it is? And like, taxi obviously makes sense. But I mean, I think I'm glad you mentioned Lee saves at the end as well, Emma, because I think they were one of the things that maybe in the aftermath took a wee while to get recognised, because they were just as important as obviously Lauren Davison scoring the winning goal. So yeah, a chaotic end to the season. But you know, I don't think, when you think about how the season progressed from the start and everything that happened to it, and I think you can get a little bit lost in like what it meant for the game and the fans and all that kind of stuff. From a purely football perspective, to get to that point and that was how it was decided was a pretty cool thing to happen, and it won't happen again anytime soon, I don't think.
Watch this space. You just never know. And, I think it's fair to say, Dave, that although there has been some transit activity, which we'll come on to a bit more soon, those three will likely be the ones that are up there again, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Celtic, they've also strengthened very, very well. We all know about Claire Kavanagh, very good player. I mean, we didn't get the opportunity she persisted at the Rangers, but she's came to Celtic and she's hit the ground running in pre-season. This is irrelevant in terms of getting the full barometer based on teams and players, but Claire Kavanagh, we all know how experienced she is within the estimate PR1. She's obviously been at Hibs, a star for them recent years. Very, very well for Rangers, but maybe just lacked that game time that she deserved last season. And then now she's at Celtic, and we'll probably look to get a starting berth for Fran Alonso, because that's the thing. I think Alonso's done a tremendous job, because Fran Alonso's always lost big players that are forward players, scored loads of goals, or players that could make that bit of difference for Celtic. And he's always replaced either like for like, or replaced with a certain identity, which has made them stronger. So I think Celtic will be stronger again. And Fran Alonso has recruited foreign as well, and done very, very well in that regard as well. Rangers will be a fascinating one, because obviously Joe Porter has come in. It looks as though they'll have a familiarity with players, Scottish players, of course, but Sam Kerr's going to be an interesting one, especially if they're going to Bayern. Obviously, Joe has taken in a few players she knows from England, so it's a bit of an unknown quantity with Rangers now, but we'll know for sure more as time goes on. And Glasgow City, renowned for being title contenders, renowned for bringing in the best, and they've recruited very, very well, Glasgow City. I think that's five or six in the window. If we're going to be honest with ourselves, I think Leanne Loston needs some reinforcements in the summer, and she's brought exactly just that.
Yeah, definitely. Although there is one player that she is going to miss, and that's Jenna Clark, who got herself a great move down to WSL to play for Liverpool. And similar with Rangers, Sam Kerr. What a move that is for her. Emma going to a club at Bayern Munich. And whilst you don't want to see your best players leave the SWPL, from a Scotland national team point of view, you also want your best Scottish players going to the best leagues. And what a move for the two girls.
Oh, it's massive. I think for Sam Kerr, she had to make that move. You know, she was a young talent that came through, and she made her mark at Glasgow City at a young age. You know, she was in the starting team, playing alongside Leanne Ross before she moved on to Rangers. So then she's continued her development and growth in the game as an individual. And for me, for this season coming on, she had to make that move. You know, she would then wants to go and test herself against the top quality players in Europe. She had to bite the hands off and take that opportunity at Bayern Munich, and it's one that she fairly deserves. I know, I think it's, we're obviously looking at the national team over the past number of seasons, and Kim Little's not been there, Leanne Crichton's obviously not there no longer, so we needed someone to come into the midfield. I felt there was a gap there, and I felt that she's filling that gap, and for her own development, you know, Sam Kerr had to go there. What a massive opportunity to go to a club of that stature. And also, as you say, Jenna Clark, also, you know, she's still a young player. You know, she's been bedded into the national team as well. She's had a number of caps already, scored a couple of goals as well. So she had to make that move as well. And of course, SWPL1 is continuing to grow. But these young Scottish players have got aspirations then to go and play elsewhere. I think they've been given the opportunity to develop their career and obviously the adult league, the SWPL1. But then if you then want to go and take that step further, unfortunately for us at this stage in our country, then they've got to look ahead and look out with in order to take that opportunity. And you've seen a number of girls do it over the years. You know, Lisa Evans, Emma Mitchell, there's so many girls that have left and tried their luck overseas or down south and they've been successful. And I've no doubt about it that Jenna Clark and Sam Kerr will be successful also. But as Dave says, you know, the ball doesn't stop rolling for Rangers, Celtic or Glasgow City. They're going to continue to recruit and fill those gaps.
Definitely. And Chris, from your point of view, when you see these moves, I mean, if you look at the national team defensively, I mean, Rachel Corsi's at that age where she's probably going to play for the next years, but can she continue further than that? And Sophie Howard's obviously in her late 20s. We'll be looking for someone to fill that gap at some point. And if Jenna Clark goes down in the WSL and performs well week in, week out, that space is there for her.
I think centre-back's a position that Pedro Rodriguez-Lopez has kind of signposted to somewhere where he's looking to see who else can come in and step up, because Rachel has missed the last couple of camps through injury and she's still performing at a very high level at Aston Villa when she's fit. And she's also playing a slightly different role at Aston Villa sometimes as well, stepping up into the midfield. I think Sophie's, for me, in terms of form over the last kind of 12, 18 months, Sophie's been one of Scotland's standouts. I think she's really come onto a game. She brings a little bit of something different. And then I suppose we're talking about Jenna obviously coming through and obviously going down to Liverpool, settling in. I think it will be a step up for Jenna. I think at Glasgow City you get to play a slightly different defensive game to what she'll be playing at Liverpool, where when she plays she'll probably be under the cosh a little bit more than she would be necessarily at Glasgow City week in, week out. But obviously Emma McCandy stepped in at centre back as well during those last couple of games and it caught me by surprise, but I tell you what, it worked. Her and Sophie Howard worked as a duo. So I think in terms of the players that have kind of left to bring it back to SWPL, I think there are, like, we haven't even touched Emma Watson because the move that everybody knows is happening but hasn't happened yet. I've recorded a podcast about it for the football club in question about 3 years ago now, but I'm assuming that eventually is going to come. But I think with those players going out, you will see regeneration within, and whether that is, for example, at Celtic, and we'll obviously talk about the other clubs in a moment, but at Celtic, you see Jenny Smith, for example, up from Hearts. She's now getting the opportunity to step up to those top three clubs. Glasgow City, Kenzie Sevier's come up on loan from Everton. I think that's a brilliant move for Kenzie. She kind of got some game time at Lewis last year, Scotland under-19 international. Tons of potential. She's not a like-for-like for Jenna. They're two slightly different players, but in terms of the profile, young Scottish looking to prove a point, she fits the bill for Glasgow City. And then Rangers, obviously, I think they've announced it's three players from their academy have now got youth contracts. Not youth contracts, professional contracts, I should say, after the last season. So Laura Berry and Mia McCauley both played a couple of games. And Ailey Austin, who actually was really impressive, I thought, for Hamilton Accies towards the end of last season. So they will also look to youth, and I think that's a huge part of the SWPL. It's a young league. I think no matter how many players come in and how many players go, it's still going to be a league that, you know, most of our players are going to be like late teens, early 20s, and then that is how you regenerate and grow, and then, you know, eventually those games, those names will get bigger, they'll move on, and then we'll get replaced again, and so the cycle continues. Scotland won the World Cup in 2023 now, so what, 20? Let's be calm, say 2011.
You want to go back to 2011?
No, sorry, wrong way round. 2031, that's what I mean. Yeah, sorry, 2031. Went back 20 years. But sorry, away from Scotland winning the World Cup. Yeah, I think the top three will be that combination. I'm not telling you which combination I think it is because I'm not sure yet, to be perfectly honest with you. I think there's still some deals to be done. And I think you're right to touch on, actually, just the nature of the transfers. Fran Alonso, again, having to turn over quite a lot of players. Jacinta leaving, Natasha Lynn obviously had a huge impact when she came in on loan. And again, it'll be interesting to see how you meld these together. It usually takes a wee while, and then they all kind of start to come together. and then Joanne Potter, how she settles into Scottish football, the Goldfish Bowl, Rangers and Celtic, but the players that she's brought up. I mean, Rachel Rowe is a, I don't know about you, Emma, but getting Rachel Rowe up to SWPL is some coup for Rangers.
No, I totally agree. You know, see, when it was announced, I actually can't quite believe it. You know, what a talented player she is. And I think for me, what Rangers lacked last season, although they've got really talented players and youth players coming through, I think they lacked that experience, that core group of experienced players who have been there and done that. You know, of course, they've got the likes of Nicola Docherty and Sam Kerr, but she's still a young player. You know, I think you need an experienced head, a core right down the middle, right down the spine of your team to get you through big games. Or there's been phases in games where you're not quite obviously clicking or gelling together, or you've conceded a goal. It's how you bounce back. And I remember myself, even as a young player coming through at Glasgow City, if something happened or you conceded a goal, you immediately looked round about you to see who it was that you could look up to get obviously help from and get that extra motivation from. And I felt that that's what Rangers lacked last season. So to bring her in, I think it's phenomenal. And you obviously spoke about the signings as well. They've only made 3 signings so far. I think Rangers, for me, have to recruit in the back line. You, of course, have obviously lost Hannah Davidson as well. And I think, for me, that's where Rangers are lacking, is the defensive line. And I'm sure, as you've mentioned, guys, that there'll be obviously more recruits coming in. I've no doubt about that. And you've touched on Celtic and Fran Alonso. And I think there's, as you say, I think as soon as France come in, there's always been a turnover of players that he's had to go over that hurdle with at the end of every season. And it always seems to be goal scorers and creative players that seem to move on. And of course, they attract, these types of players naturally get attraction from other teams, so they are going to move on. So I think obviously filling Jacinta's boots will be a big ask. Of course, we've brought in Jenny Smith. She's obviously made that step up, and it will be interesting to see how she adapts to full-time professional football, how she copes with that, the demands it's placed on you being at a club at Celtic, and of course Natasha Flint. I mean, when she came on board, I thought that was a phenomenal signing. Also, how they managed to get her. Of course, it was only on loan, but the goals that she scored, especially at Hampden, and managed to pull Celtic back in the title running was phenomenal. So I think for me, they do have, I think Celtic and Rangers have got a lot of recruitment to do. I think Glasgow City, on the other hand, they started their recruitment early on. Lero was right on the case, you know. She knew, because when she had taken over, it wasn't her group of players that she brought in, you know. And Glasgow City had that turnaround of managers in place. You know, they had obviously in as well. So they had, and then obviously the lacking in players that they had, the depth in their squad that they had. So she knew at the end of last season that there was a big recruitment drive that had to happen, and she's managed to get a number of players in already.
I think it's quite telling as well how quickly the players that went out were as well for Leanne Ross, because
yeah,
it was a squad that Eileen Glaze had been built up. Leanne had came in, but they've signed like 2 or 3 strikers, and I think that's maybe, I think I wrote this somewhere recently, it's quite weird to say that the team that won the league and that had the league's top goal scorer in it last season maybe could have done with another couple of striking options, but I think they kind of needed another couple of striking options, and they've obviously brought in Corey Sullivan and Brendan Oliveira. Yeah. And 2 players I don't know a lot about, let's be honest. It's sometimes away with these kind of players, but I know that Brendan Oliveira in particular, they've been chasing for quite a while.
I think Sarah Ewan's a good sign for Rangers. I'll be very honest with you. I was impressed with her a couple of years ago. I didn't actually know what she signed until I was just doing a little bit of research there 2 minutes ago while she was were in the background. But I think Sarah Ewan's a very good sign for Rangers because she's had a couple of years where she's went away to London City, Chris?
London City Lionesses, yeah. She was second top goal scorer, I think, in the Championship last season. I think she's got 11 goals. And London City had I'm not going to say it because it's speculative, but London City losing quite a few players, a number of which have come up to Scotland, a couple returning as well, which I'm sure we'll get to. But yeah, I think you're right. I think the striking options that Rangers have had as well, Rio Hardy. I was speaking to somebody who knows the Northeast women's football scene far better than I do, and he was very, very, very full of praise for Rio Hardy and the potential she has to make a bit of a splash up here as well.
I think she will. I think was she not the Golden Boot winner down at Durham
I think so, yeah.
Last season? Yeah, I'm sure I read that. So And I think for me, especially obviously with Jane Ross, obviously just coming back from her ACL injury, I think that's what Rangers lacked in, and heavily relied on Kirsty Howitt at times. Although obviously Glasgow City relied on Lauren Davidson, she came up with the goods, but that wasn't always the case at Rangers. So no, there's been interesting signings, and it'll be an interesting few weeks, shall we say, even before the league starts next week. And I'm sure we'll see a number of players being brought in. But I'm sure, John, you'll bring in about the recruitment that Hearts and Hibs have done also, and even Aberdeen. I don't think we can forget about Aberdeen. Also bringing in a full-time coach, a full-time manager. So there's a lot of changes in the league and into this season.
Yeah,
I think to elaborate on Emma's point quickly, John, I do think that Rangers maybe do need another striker. It's just kind of alluded to just that number 9, number 10, maybe just in behind the Howitt or Jane Ross. It'll be a big season for Jane Ross, especially after the ACL. Howitt, she needs a big season as well, I think, especially after her injury struggles over the last few years as well. Obviously came back to full fruition in recent times, but I think Howitt and Ross do need a big season in their hands, but I do think they need another number 9 just to kind of push that competition. Ewan's will obviously help in terms of her adaptability and her versatility, so the likes of Hardy and all that as well. So a few more, and I think that's the puzzle complete as far as Rangers are concerned. But as Emma's just touched upon, obviously, Aberdeen have recruited very, very well. A goalkeeper, and that was something that from an Aberdeen perspective, I wasn't sure about. From an Aberdeen point of view, and you can understand if you're listening, because I've got obviously a Doric accent, but I wanted Warren Perry because I like Warren. I've obviously worked with Warren, and I was a bit surprised when she made the move to Montrose, but that just shows the aspirations that Montrose are going to in their journey up from the Championship, because what a journey they've been on. But Hibs, Hearts signed a player today, but don't ask me to pronounce his surname, thank you very much. But every squad in the league is progressing really, really well. And Hearts, I think they signed 2 strikers recently, and that's to add to Timbs and Danny McGinley. I think she'll be a really, really good signing for Hearts as well.
Yeah, I mean, she contributed to, 47% of Dundee United's goals, whether it was scoring or assisting. No, if you talk about thumbs up from Chris, I must have done my research. So, that shows how much Dundee United relied on her. In terms of last season, there was only 2 occasions Rangers dropped points to sides out with Celtic and Glasgow City. There was only 1 where Celtic lost that would have dropped points to out with. Glasgow City didn't drop anything, and that proved to be a difference. Do we see this season more teams, especially like Sir Hearts and Hibs, who have invested a wee bit more this summer, to take more points off the top 3, whilst there might still be a gap and might close a little?
To be honest with you, I think it will be similar to last season in terms of, I think the league's almost split up into 3 mini-leagues for me. I think you'll have the top 3 as normal, and then you'll have the middle part of the league fighting it out for top 6, and then you'll have the bottom, obviously, for relegation. So I think, for me, if you look at, obviously, the results and the season's gone by, if you're looking to retain that title or win that title, if you drop points to any other team out with your challengers at the top of the table, you won't win the league. I think that's, and when I was at Glasgow City, that was drilled into you. You know, from day one, as soon as you stepped in the front door, if you drop points to any team that's below you, out with your title rivals, then you won't win the league. And obviously, as you say there, John, that's how it resulted in Celtic and Rangers dropping more points in Glasgow City, because Glasgow City were able to beat and gain points from everyone else that they played in the league, out with obviously Rangers and Celtic that they played against. So I think it will be a similar pattern, because of course, yeah, Hibs and Hearts are progressing nicely. Yeah, they're growing, their development, as is Aberdeen, as is Spartans, as is the full league. But I think for me, there's still that gap between the top 3 and everyone else. So yeah, I do think it will be similar to last season, but as I said, if you're dropping points away to, no disrespect to Spartans or Motherwell or whoever it may be, then it immediately puts you under pressure for that league title, in my opinion.
I think, like you saw that with Rangers as well, they had to beat Celtic towards the end of the season. They got that result, and then the following game week, they obviously dropped those points to Hearts, and that basically put them behind the 8 ball. That when we were talking about the final day of the season earlier on, it just meant that they were very much the outsiders in that case, but I think Hearts are the 4th team at the moment. I think Hearts, especially when you look at some of the recruitment they've made, it's almost like they've systematically addressed some of the gaps that they had in their team, coupled with some of the players out. So, I mean, Ryan Sampson, who's performing so well with Jamaica at the World Cup at the moment, she's one of the players that is to the left. We've obviously talked about Jenny Smith as well. But when you look at the players that have come in, Danny Beanley, we've already talked about, so key for Dundee United. But they've also brought in the likes of Katie Lockwood, who was on only at Hibs for a very short spell towards last season, but she, you know what, she added some goals. And I think that was a big thing that Hearts missed last season, is if Georgia Timms wasn't scoring, nobody else really was. And Kathleen McGovern coming back from her spell in Germany. Kathleen's obviously, I don't know about you, Emma, but maybe I'm getting old, but I'm starting to get to the point now where some of the younger players who are still like 19 or 20, it feels like they've been in the game for about 10 years already. And then obviously you see like Kathleen's, what, 20, I think, if that, coming back as well. And then they've also made some additions in defence. Well, Carly Gerasoli, another one, again, like early 20s, but she feels like she's been playing for about the last 7 years.
Yeah, no,
Arthur Robert, Gerasoli, I think that's a cracking signing.
Yeah, very good signing. I know, because when I was playing with Celtic for that season, McGov was coming through and she was starting, and I'm thinking, this young girl's only 16, 17. Now, as you're saying, it makes me even feel older now that when I read on the article, she's still only 20, 21. And I'm thinking, really? That's a fantastic signing, as you say, Dave, for and Gerasoli coming up. I mean, obviously, I think that's what is good about our SWPL1, is you can bed young players at 16, 17 and get them playing at the top flight football, get them tasting Champions League football. Then they can go away and look to see if they can make that step up to develop their career, and then when they come back to our league, they're even better players. They're going to improve our league all round, and they're still a young, talented players. And I think for me, knowing McGov like I did, and even Carly, they'll be looking obviously to try and push to get into the national team. For me, I think if you have a really good season under the nose of Pedro playing in Scotland, I think it can maybe turn heads. So I think it's both fantastic signings for Hearts. I think Eva's done extremely well last season with Hearts. I think for me, Hearts are steadily growing in development. I don't think they've not put the likes of Rangers and Celtic put all their money in at the one time and expected a quick turnaround with the investment. I think it's been gradually done at a steady pace, which suits the club and all. And it suits obviously the team. So I think they will still challenge, and I agree, Chris, with yourself. I think they'll be the fourth team in the league, and they'll still look to challenge the top three for me. But I think they're still ahead of Hibernian. I think Hibernian are still going through that phase of trying to gain, obviously, where they were a number of seasons ago to be one of the top teams in the league. They had a big turnaround of players. A lot of players had left them, went overseas, went down south, wherever it may be. So they brought Grant Scott in, however, I think, which was a great appointment, considering he knows the league inside out. He's been there before. And not only that, he's a well-respected man. And I think that's vitally important for any management team nowadays. I think you've got to gain the respect and the belief and the confidence from the players in that changing room. And he brings that to the changing room, and I think that's important, because if you, as a manager or a coaching team, at any stage you've obviously lost the changing room, then it's an extremely difficult job, and it's a job that I wouldn't want to be in.
There you go, Chris.
No, you go, John.
I was just going to say, I texted Grant Scott to say the Aberdeen gig was up, but then as soon as I heard this, I thought he's only in one place, so fair enough. But
I've got a penny of a thought for Chris Marshall here, because if you ever go and cover Hearts, Chris, I've got a thought for you. If you ever go and cover Sadie, Ada Moeker, because that's going to be a very long surname. Hearts have just signed her today. She's a winger. So a penny of a thought for you there, Chris. But I think 5-10 years ago, I think Scottish women's football would be a cheap shopping list for English clubs in terms of players leaving Scotland and going to England. They would just be pursued away for pretty much nothing. No investment, no real value as such. It's more, right, you've done well for a certain club within the SWPL1, off you go. Like Abby Harrison, for example, was a certain example of that, where she did very, very well at Hibs and then went across to England. But now you're finding players such as Gerasoli and all that are coming back to Scotland, maybe because it hasn't materialised in England, or because you see Scotland as their springboard again to rejuvenate their career, or indeed have their aspirations of getting a national team call-up. So I think that just shows where we're going in terms of Scottish women's football, where we're getting foreign players and strong foreign players that add a lot of value to the Scottish game. We're also getting our homegrown players back, where they're obviously looking to add their own value, which in turn means they've got national team aspirations or potentially make the move to England again, or indeed move to another big club in Scotland.
I think the other thing is just the league is more attractive now for a young player to come back to, compared with maybe two or three seasons ago. So if, like, as an option for Carly, if she wanted to progress, there was, let's be honest, at the time Glasgow City and Hibs, Rangers and Celtic were part of the pack, and obviously that's changed recently in terms of how investments come in. But now there's options for players like Carly who, if maybe she wants to come back up to Scotland, she doesn't have to rely on one of those clubs. I think the strength of the SWPL has always been its young players, and to bring it back to the teams that we're talking about just now, I think with Hearts, Eve Ollett, let's be honest, she kind of came in and nobody really knew who she was. And the fact that the job that she's done, and obviously she's been supported quite well by Hearts in terms of the club as a whole, I think Sean Burt started to get his flowers a little bit as well in terms of the work he does supporting her and kind of fulfilling like what she wants to try and get out of the side. And then you move to Hibs, who for a long time had this kind of tradition of bringing in young Scottish talent. And maybe it's just in an effort to keep up, it maybe lost its way a little bit. And I think what's been interesting with Grant coming back in, and he was involved in that academy that brought in the likes of Jamie Lee Napier, Abby Harrison, like he was there at that time, is when you look at some of the signings he's made, Maya Christie's come down from Aberdeen, Tegan Bowie, Abby Ferguson, all kind of young players like can be moulded a little bit. And I think that's what you'll see with clubs at that kind of under level, is like, how can you maximise the best you can from the talents available on your doorstep? And I think that will make it, as I said, I just think that makes it such an exciting league to follow, because you never know when you're going to see like the next big thing just hit you in the face. And that's kind of what's going to happen this season, I'm sure.
I think Hibs recruitment has been decent. Whether they'll be good enough to finish with Hearts is another thing. But I think Maya Christie from Aberdeen's a very good signing. I think Tegan Bowie from Celtic's a good player. And who else have they sent? Lauren Dunbar's had experience at Motherwell, obviously. So they're building a nice little squad.
They signed a player called Powell, but our Twitter name says Nay Powell.
Nay Powell.
Nay Powell. I think her name, I can't
it's
remember.
It's Naomi Powell, she signed
for Naomi, is it? Her Twitter handle's Nay Powell.
Oh dear, that's going to be one for the commentators all season. But yeah, I think that'll be, do we think Hearts and Hibs are likely going to be fourth and fifth respectively, or do you think there will be a challenge to that fifth place side from one of the ones that are competing for top six, or is there just one top six space available for the rest?
I think the top five will be the same top five.
Yeah.
I think fourth and fifth, I don't want to do the predictions, but I think fourth and fifth will probably be the same position. I think top three. And then to be fair, Partick Thistle got pretty close to Hibs last season. And I think that top six spot, I think you're probably looking at Partick Thistle, Motherwell, Spartans, Aberdeen. I don't know, Aberdeen I think are kind of in that kind of middle land between the kind of relegation section and top six section. I think you could go one way or the other with Aberdeen just now.
I think this is a transition season for Aberdeen, if I'm going to be honest. New manager came in from England. You players will have to get used to the familiarity of the Gareth City, and it's going to be an interesting one, because Aberdeen are going down a completely different path over the women's programme this year.
But I think I think what's cool is the fact that the top six, like, is competitive. There's teams that are pushing to go further up the table, whether that is trying catching up with Hearts and Hibs, get the top six spot. Like, I think that is was a big plus point for me last season, was sometimes from the past, the SWPL would maybe feel like it's kind of like one or two teams, and then maybe something maybe happened at the bottom. But I felt like last season there was something to play for up and down that league pretty much all the way through. And I think that's a testament to kind of strength in the way that players are now coming through that system, and people are bringing players in to try and help bolster the whole league as a whole.
I think this is a season too soon for Aberdeen in terms of top six. I think what is great is that they've brought in a full-time manager. Credit to club for putting that through, because it took them a long time to get that sorted, but credit to Zoe Ogilvie and the board for pushing that through. They've lost a couple of real good players. I mentioned Christie earlier. Lauren Campbell's retirement is a biggie as well. And the year before it was Kelly Donald as well. Bailey Collins has gotten a mother, and I thought she was Aberdeen's best player last season. However, they've retained Bailey Hutchison, which is massive. They've brought on another striker, Hannah, the partner. They've brought on a new goalkeeper. Pre-season results have been good. So I don't think Aberdeen will be in a relegation battle, but I don't think they'll be top six either. I think this is too soon. I think it's going to be one of Motherwell, Spartans and Partick again. And I think it might be Motherwell this season. I think Motherwell have recruited well again and they've got a good, strong squad from last season. They're probably a little annoyed that they didn't make it last year. They got the Scottish Cup CFL, so they still had a good season, but they'll want to push that bit further, wouldn't they?
They've got a young team this year, Motherwell, but what Motherwell do have, and Paul Brownlee has been very good in implementing this, is they've got a maturity now. They didn't have that last year. And I think that's maybe what hurt Motherwell to a certain extent. They maybe just didn't have that maturity to maybe see them over certain games. I mean, I remember at the start of the season how they might have gotten a result here or there against teams, but the performances were good, but maybe the results just were a little bit underwhelming. But they slowly but surely were gelling together and maturing as a team together later on in the season. This is a season that I do think they'll kick on. But Partick Thistle's the interesting one for me because, yes, they've recruited very, very well, but at exactly the same time, they have to replicate the standards of last season. Well, last season was a tremendous achievement for a club of Partick Thistle's stature, but they need to replicate that. And there's obviously been a lot of upheaval off the park, which is irrelevant considering how that's obviously company in the men's side, but for the women's side, it's about trying to build on last season. The whole thing off the park with Fairhill leaves a glare in the eye amongst many of the watching Thistle supporters regarding could the club do a bit more. But irrespective of that's just an irrelevant thoughts that away from the current situation. And Partick will look to kick on and show that they're still going an upward trajectory like they have been in the last 3 or 4 years.
I agree with Partick. I think they outshone everybody. I think they were the surprise pick last season, given obviously the results that they had. But I think for me, they have obviously regained quite a lot of their players in terms of the ones that drove the team forward. I think that's what they've a real togetherness at that club within that changing room. And I think they've recruited well as well. They've obviously got the likes of Cody Hay coming across from Motherwell to join Partick Thistle. So I think they will still be, I think, relatively within the top six, seventh, eighth spot. But as you touched on, Chris, I think Spartans will be there also, there or thereabouts as well. I think they'll have a big say in it. Motherwell, of course, they've recruited extremely well, as Dave says. And they've got a really good coaching group and management group there. And Paul Brownlee and Leanne Crichton, you know, they set really extremely high standards. And what Paul's good at also is that communication with the top three clubs in terms of getting players on loan. I think he's really, really good at that.
Bailey Jordan coming back is a big
part. I was going to just say that. Took the words right out of your mouth there, Chris, you know. And I thought she was really good towards the end of the season for Motherwell, slotting into that midfield spot. I thought she was a driving force at times. You know, she's very creative. She's comfortable on the ball. And I think that's a good move for her development also, to get minutes in SWPR1 at that level. So I think Aberdeen, as you said, John, I don't think they will be in that relegation battle. I think they'll just be outside of that. It'll be a difficult season, in my opinion, once again for Hamilton. There's no doubt about that. And you can see how, and football in general, it doesn't matter what club, what team, what gender you're at, the biggest part of football and the hardest part is recruitment. No, because every team at this time of the season is everyone's out there trying to get players, and it's then trying to convince that particular player to come to your club. And I think that's what Hamilton struggle at is recruiting players that have been there, done that, experienced players who have been there. And they've got a relatively young squad, Hamilton, in my opinion, and I think they'll struggle again. They'll find it difficult. It'll be interesting to see how Montrose does, as Dave says, but I think Montrose have got a group of players that previously, Dave will maybe correct me on this, played at Forfa Farmington. So they've got players that have got experience that have played at Forfa before, and they've jumped and went to Montrose, and they've gained obviously promotion, which has been fantastic for them. They've obviously signed the goalkeeper from Dundee United, which for me is a phenomenal sign as well. I thought she'd have went to maybe a bigger club or so, but of course she's coming back for an ACL injury as well, so she needs minutes under her belt. But I think the bottom three there, I think it will be a struggle for them, and it'll be interesting to see how they compete against each other in that environment.
What I will say is I think Montrose will be clear of the rest. And you're right, by the way, just to clarify, Montrose do have a few ex-four for Charlotte Garby. I think that's a big player, going to be a big player for him. She got top scorer, I think, last year in SNPL2. Beth Mowat, good young goalie. Warren, obviously, looking to bounce back after an ACL. Even like Sakili Brough, they've obviously went and stayed on and obviously going to play their part this season as well. So it's going to be an interesting one. What I will say is I think Montrose will be clear of Dundee United and Hamilton, because Montrose have been very proactive in the transfer market. United haven't been. Obviously, Jay McLaren's went to Montrose, Warren Perry's went to Montrose, Robin Smith, I think, went to Montrose as well. Was it Robin? I think it was Robin went to Montrose as well. And obviously, McGinley's went to Hearts.
That's Steve Guffrey, David, sorry, just to see if you can get into trouble with anybody. Steve Guffrey went to Montrose. Robin's still at United at the moment.
Oh, there was somebody who joined United. Was it Tommy? It was Tommy Harkin, wasn't it? I got mixed up. I knew it was one of them. It's a good job you qualified me there, Chris. Don't worry, they're not lookalike, but it's just I got mixed up with the players there. United are basically, Montrose are basically hunting on United's ground to get all the best possible players they possibly can. And it's not deteriorating United, but it's leaving United in a very precarious position for this season coming in. And Hamilton, they're going to be Hamilton, aren't they? They're going to bring through young players, develop them, and they're not going to be one of these clubs that are going to be looking to compete. They're just one of these clubs that just like the developing players. And that's their ethos as such. So, yeah, that's going to be rather interesting.
I think Bobby Watson will probably come and hunt you if you say he's not looking to compete. But to give my whistle stop take on that and that group, kind of group of clubs, I think with Partick Thistle, I'm not really worried about what's happened with them as a wider club. I think actually when you look at Partick Thistle and how they communicate as a club, they all seem to be in it together. I think they've got another couple of players coming in that have been on trial recently. I think Lucy Sinclair coming in is quite a nice bit of business, and she's obviously been quite key for Hamilton Accies. And then, I think Motherwell, I think, John, you mentioned the Bailey Collins signing. I think that's something that maybe Motherwell needed to add a bit more of, maybe even still. And I think there is a couple more coming in. Just a bit more pace. I think they've got quite a lot of technically good players. We've got a bit of, as you alluded to, Emma, like Paul Noiano having well drilled. They've got a good bit of technique in that squad, especially in that midfield. Katie Rice and Lucy Rolland, I think, for contextually, I think we're one of the strongest midfield duos in the league last season in terms of what we were performing. And then Spartans maybe not the outsiders, but I think maybe just because I don't think they're going to be adding that many more bodies to what they've got at the moment. And it's quite a young side. They also had that really great run towards the end of the season, 10 games unbeaten in the bottom half of the league. And then, I think the bottom three, you are probably looking at a combination of Hamilton, Dundee United and Montrose at the moment. I'm not as bold as to say that Montrose are going to be well clear of it. I think coming from SWPL to SWPL is a big jump. And whether those players have played it for Farmington in the past, I think it kind of negates the idea that the SWPL has moved very quickly in the last 3-4 years. So I think that...
I just think they've got a lot more forward-thinking players and a lot more balance to Dundee United.
All I'm saying is I think that it's going to be very tight at the bottom between the three sides. And I think that Hamilton will, as you say, they have looked to youth, bringing in players from Glasgow City. I mean, Avery Robertson's an interesting signing because he's come up from SWPL too as well. 17 goals last season. I think it was only Abby Callaghan scored more at Queen's Park last term as well. So there will be those kind of mini-leagues that populate. But I think it'll be very interesting to see how... That kind of, like, I don't want to say underneath the top five, because I feel like top five is maybe doing a disservice to maybe teams that are wanting to get into that top five, but it certainly feels like top five at the moment, is maybe the best way of putting it. And how that kind of starts to shake out over the course of a season.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. What I will say in terms of Hamilton, they've managed to keep hold of Josie Giard, who is the main source of goals, was Dundee United, also lost Danny McGinley. Could that be the difference in who finishes bottom and who finishes in the playoff? Who knows? Montrose have also got London Pollard and Lauren Gordon up front, which is a good combination. So, yeah, it's going
to
be...
Lauren Gordon's away. Sorry, John, just to help you out. Yeah, right. So I don't think Lauren's going to be back for this season. I think she's moving away. And I actually haven't seen London kicking about, but to the point, yeah, I think...
Shirley to Wales?
Yes.
Our partner plays for TNS, is it?
I don't know the machinations of that. I know she's away to Wales. From an SWPL perspective, that's about that I know. But what I will say is that I think you are going to have a closer bottom table than we did last season. I think we can say that pretty unequivocally. Whoever ends up in that mix.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will have a record like Glasgow Women, unfortunately. That was unfortunate for them last season. So, yeah, you don't want to see that, someone get coming away with nil point at the end of the season. Good luck to all 12 sides. And obviously, the SWPL have announced first 18 matches that are going to be live in a combination of BBC and one on Sky, which is good to see. I saw that someone at Montrose was not happy that they weren't featured in it, which I can understand. However, I do see Douglas McNeil. Is that the boy's name, Emma?
Yeah, that's him, yeah.
Yeah, he came out quick enough to say that they are looking at it, showing the first game next week. It's just getting this health and safety with the stand or whatever.
Yeah, I think towards the beginning of last season, there was a similar situation with Hibernian as well. It's all got to do with scaffolding, as you say, is John, health and safety, getting it signed off. And of course, obviously, if you want to obviously go and show a game live on television, obviously to promote the women's game, you don't then want the camera being on ground level, because that's obviously not giving a true picture or a true image of the game. So of course, obviously, it's got to have the appropriate setup, health and safety regulation, signed off. So no, I think Douglas works extremely hard with communication with all clubs, and not everybody knows the background that goes into it. Like you guys in the media, nobody knows, and these players, coaches, people on sitting on the board at clubs don't realise the amount of work that goes in within the media side of it. And I was one of those people, because I didn't know the amount of work that went into it until I started obviously being involved. So you know, Douglas does a tremendous job, you know, trying to push in and get obviously the sports scene highlights, getting extended, etc., like more minutes shown on TV, getting as many games as possible shown on TV live. So, no, but you're right, John, yeah. So I think they're looking to try and get the Montrose game on next week, but obviously just trying to get it signed off properly.
I like Douglas's transparency. Him and Fiona McIntyre are good at being transparent, you know, and just they don't hide, they just come out and, you know, make explanations. So long may that continue, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, because I know obviously Balmoral Stadium, obviously Cove won't be in the championship this season at men's level, but they've kept the scaffolding up at Balmoral Stadium just for BBC Albion, BBC Sports Scotland for the Aberdeen Women games, and that's obviously for the presence of Aberdeen Women, and that's obviously why these things have to be taken into consideration. So here's hoping Montrose can get the same sort of treatment, which I'm sure Douglas and the team will provide. And because Montrose, what a journey they've been on, and what a moment it will be next Sunday when they will take on Celtic. Because a lot of people in the Montrose area have touched on it about how proud a moment it was for Montrose when they eventually did get up to SWPL1, and it's going to be a big moment when they take Celtic on next Sunday.
Yeah, I was up there when they got the SWPL2 trophy, and as it's a sort of moment, like no Montrose team of any kind has played top tier football in Scotland. And that's the women's team are going to be the first team to do that. And I think it almost is, and this is a bit big picture, good for the game chat, but the fact that there's another team in that part of the world that's in the top tier, I think that's important as well, because I think there is sometimes that little fear that it can get a little bit central belt centric, and I say that sitting in my flat in Glasgow. But I think there's a little bit of fear that it can get like that sometimes. So I think having teams that really represent the length and breadth of the country is only a good thing as well. But yeah, to go back to John's sum up, I am looking forward to the season starting when it's coming round.
Yeah, it should be a cracker. And one thing that we'll also, before moving on quickly to international stuff, is last season what was good was that almost every club that have access to main stadium were using it. Like Aberdeen had Pittodrie open, Celtic Park had opened twice, Ibrox was also used for last day of season, and a Champions League qualifier. So hopefully that continues. Hopefully we can get it more than once. But if I know Fiona McIntyre as well as I do, she'll be pushing for that, and having the clubs to say get more in. Because the other thing is, you know, if Sky are covering more, they'd like to see that too. And obviously BBC can't forget their involvement either, Emma.
No, absolutely not. I think that's vitally important. It was certainly a historic, obviously, season, last season, for everyone involved, all the clubs involved. As you say, John, like getting to use, obviously, the male counterpart stadium, and you've seen the crowds that come through the turnstiles, and I think, for me, we've got to capitalise on that. We've got to continue to grow that and have that interest. I mean, for example, I was on holiday just not so long ago, and I was in Spain. And someone had recognised me and says, oh, we were at Parkhead for the Celtic women's game with their little boys, and that's the first time they'd ever been to a football game. And he says it was phenomenal. And he says that they're going to continue to go to all the women's games. So, you know, that's just one family that I'd just spoken to, but there's hundreds of people that have been out there, they've experienced that. And I think it's important that we continue that growth because it was massive. You know, I think particularly at Parkhead, that was the one that everybody was speaking about, wasn't it? You know, the amount of supporters that came through the turnstile. And it's just phenomenal as a player to go out and play in front of being in a big stadium, first and foremost, but then having your home crowd and the number of supporters there is huge. And I think, yeah, we've got to continue that onto this season. And I'm sure, as you've mentioned, Fiona McIntyre, you know, she'll be battering down doors at clubs to make sure that happens.
Yeah, definitely. Here's to another good SWPL season and more record crowds being broken, etc. I know Scotland didn't qualify, but we can't not mention this World Cup on this podcast.
The group stages have been completed. We can just totally glaze over it, John. Well, doesn't really matter. But
no. I know, but it's difficult not to, because, you know, some of the stories, I mean, we're talking about hoping that the gap closes in the SWPL, but what you're seeing in the Women's World Cup is there's a lot of gaps closing. Like, three African teams in the last 16 is just incredible. And then today, as we're recording this, the Thursday last group stages game, second-ranked Germany, what were they, twice World Cup winners, out in the first round? It's absolutely incredible.
I mean, it's huge, isn't it? I mean, see, if you'd say to me tonight that Canada won't be in the knockout stages, you know, Brazil won't be in the knockout stages, you know, Germany won't be in the knockout stages, it's just phenomenal. And as you touched on the African teams, I mean, Jamaica, for example, needed crowd funding to actually get to the World Cup in the first place, and now they've qualified for the knockout stages. It's just incredible. And at that, Jamaica are unbeaten, and they've yet to concede a goal. So, as you say, the gap's closing domestically, but it's also closing worldwide. Also, I think for the people would go, obviously, look at Germany, Canada, Brazil, England, and see all these huge nations with huge, big players. And when they come up against a weaker nation, just the physicality was just too strong, and they were just brushing these countries aside. Whereas now, those weaker teams, weaker countries that people were speaking about, you know, they've now stood up. You know, they've now matched that physicality. No, they've now matched how far can you run? I'll run the same distance. And it just comes down to tactics, philosophy of the manager, you know, obviously the technical ability of individual players, but big players can showpiece on big games. And I think it's definitely closing, and it's much more exciting, isn't it? Like, it's just phenomenal. Like, watching the game today, as I was supposed to be working, but we won't tell anyone that. You know, I was watching the Germany game, I'm thinking, this is phenomenal, like coming away from my computer at my desk, back to the TV. It's just incredible.
Everyone that listens to this podcast, Emma.
I think you're right though, Emma, like to touch on the Germany Korea and Morocco Colombia game. So I had the Germany Korea game on, like, I've got two screens where I work. So I had that on one screen, I had my phone out with the other one, and you're waiting, obviously, where the Morocco result comes in, and then you're waiting to watch the Morocco players celebrate the fact that the other game's gone down, and you're like, oh. But I think it's so important. I think that's probably, I was looking at the 2019 World Cup, and there wasn't really shocks. There was underdogs, but the underdogs never had their day. And this tournament feels like every underdog's getting their day, like whether it's like that Marta Cox goal for Panama. I mean, yeah, they got beat 6-3 and they're out, but that moment is going to live on forever in terms of Women's World Cup history. And as Emma says, like Jamaica making it through unbeaten in that group with Brazil and France, and then Morocco, South Africa. It's cool to see from a growth perspective that it's not just going to be all the big nations, all the ones that can supercharge it super quick, that can then be the ones that kind of dominate the scene in terms of the World Cup. So yeah, obviously a joke that like we shouldn't be talking about it, because I have been watching bits of it. But it's been good World Cup. I'm a little bit worried about the direction of travel of who might win the World Cup at the moment. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it, I think.
even the likes of Panama, I mean, they could beat 5-3 for Panama, and they celebrated like they actually won the game. It wasn't as though it was a case of, oh my God, we've lost and brought them way away. The goal, and it was success for Panama, and that just goes to show you the opportunities that have restricted movement in football until now, essentially. And that just goes to show you how we're just growing and growing. Positive, it's highly positive for Panama. Everybody jumped up. I think there's even France supporters related as well, which just goes to show you where this is at. So there was the World Cup. It's just been absolutely brilliant. It was important, in my honest opinion, imperative, John, that we jumped on from last year, had the momentum from last year, and so it proved to be.
Yeah, it's just been incredible. And then in the last 16, looking at them both halves as well, dare I say it right now, but this for me is England's best chance of reaching a World Cup final. I mean, they've got a favourable side of the draw with some of the bigger hitters on the other side, but then they're in amongst a group where there's been short nations. But I would expect England to go to that. My fear is an England Netherlands final, because guess who Scotland are playing the Nations League coming up this year?
No, I agree. I think for me, even at the group stages just there, I don't think England were quite clicking and gelling together, weren't they not? And then they've had that obviously big loss of Ciara Walsh being out injured. But you know, they've still got a huge group of players, talented group of players that can come in and play in that position. And obviously shown that against China. And I think obviously the one player that everyone's talking about is Lauren James, isn't it? I mean, even her second goal against China was phenomenal. So, you know, she's just caught the flight of the ball, not taking her eye off it, opened up her left foot and just slotted it into the opposite side of the goalkeeper. And I think that's the player that everyone's speaking about. There's no doubt about it for this World Cup is Lauren James. But no, you're right, John. I think for me, this is a favourable side of the draw that they have, that they could potentially go all the way. And as you say, who's their first League Nations game against in September? England.
I do not want to be in Sunderland for, and I don't care if I'm saying this out loud, I do not want to be in Sunderland for a World Cup victory parade. I was in Wembley for when they won the Euros, and I was like, I could resolve that in my head as a special moment to see a European Championship final. Don't know if I can do it in the Stadium of Light in September. And I think the thing as well is, I think maybe only Sweden and Japan, or maybe the other two that have impressed. I mean, the USA have been, not very USA-like. So, yeah.
Post away from getting it.
So, I think it actually, before the tournament started, I thought it was quite open in terms of who might win it. Yeah. I think you're starting to see that whittled down. But, yeah, I think you probably are looking at, like, maybe USA turn it on. But the fact they've got Sweden in this round of 16 and Sweden have looked great, I mean, it makes it really difficult for them. I think you are looking at the likes of England, Netherlands, Sweden, Japan, if they can do what they did, like they did against Spain, then there's absolutely no reason why they can't go deep as well.
Yeah, I think the other side's harder to call. I mean, the team that's impressed me the most is Japan, and they're a former World Cup winner, they're a former World Cup finalist. It wasn't a surprise they beat Spain, it was a surprise they beat them 4-0. It was, they were just absolutely standing. But yeah, good luck to all the teams in the competition. We might say less win, but in terms of the Nations List, I've got to mention this obviously before we wrap up. So, and we will do proper previews near time. But so Scotland in the Nations League, it's a tough group. You know, it's England, it's Netherlands, two of the favourites to win this tournament, and then you've got Belgium, who are a pretty decent side as well. Is the expectation to try not to finish fourth and drop down into League B, or can we cause a surprise? You never know. But we have, I mean, we're on a good run of form. You know, we've won four games in a row, and, you know, we've integrated players like Emma Watson and into squad and stuff as well. But yeah, we've got to be realistic as well, haven't we?
I think, yeah, we've got to be realistic. But I think if you'd said that to me a year ago, would we expect to finish at the bottom of it? And I'd have said 100% yeah, because I don't think we were in form then. Absolutely not. You know, obviously failing to qualify for the World Cup before that, failing to qualify for the Euros. I think we were on a dark cloud over the national team the past two seasons. And I think now we've had obviously those four back-to-back victories And as you say, touched on, we've brought obviously Emma Watson in, they've brought McLean in also, and I think that's what the squad needed. They needed obviously that injection of youth into the squad. I think what could affect the players, I don't know, in my opinion, could have been that Kim Little was no longer there. She was always the go-to player. Of course you've got Caroline Muir, of course you've got Erin Cuthbert, but for Kim Little, she was always a go-to player, and I think we've just been missing that little bit of spark within the national team. And I think for me, Emma Watson's brought that on board, McLean's brought that on. And I think, as you mentioned earlier on, Chris, I think Sophie Howard's been outstanding. I think she's been our number one defender. And then you've got, obviously, Emma McCandy coming back in. I think she's been really good. I think it's suited her style of play now. I won't say she's older, I say she's more experienced, that she's been brought in infield. And I think she's done extremely well there. She played a number of games with Reading in that position, so it's not a position that she's not aware of. So I think we've got to be realistic, but I think we've got, obviously, as Scotland, of course, we've got an upset in us. I think we could get a result against a big nation. I think you've got to look at Belgium and you've got to think we've got to take full points from them. I think that's got to be a given. I think for us, if you're comparing it, for me, squad by squad, player by player, individually, I think we've got a better group of girls, better group of players to go on and get maximum points out that game. And of course, there's been upsets before. You know, we've beaten the Netherlands before, we've beaten England before, albeit in a friendly tournament. But I think, yeah, there's got to be an upset, but I think we're in a good run of form. We're going to the Nations League in good form, good spirits. You know, the confident levels are extremely high. And as long as everyone stays fit, I think that's the most important thing as well, isn't it? I mean, girls are on pre-season at the moment, and then the league campaign starts for everyone, and then it's back into international football.
I think what's been heartening about the run of friendlies as well is, I think maybe to touch on the fact Kim Little, if I think the first thing when Kim Little kind of stepped away from international football was, I think everybody kind of looked at Erin and Caroline and went, there's our two that are going to lead us. And I think what's really heartening, especially in the recent games, is it's not just Erin and Caroline any longer. You've got, see, Emma's just came in and taken it all in her stride, like she seems to have done absolutely everything else so far. But then Kirsty Hansen, who has just come off this back of this incredible season at Aston Villa, she's taken it into the national side. I think we've now got options. Like, it feels like there's a... I think I've said this a couple of times. I felt like at times maybe in the early stages of Pedro Martinez Losa, I didn't really know what we were trying to achieve. And I think now, actually, in the last four games, you've seen that clear kind of plan. Like, we know how we want to play. We know the players that we need to come in to then replace the player that maybe somebody has to drop out. I think you see that even with replacement call-ups. I think there was times where maybe a body was appearing in the squad as opposed to somebody who could maybe take in a role. Part of me is a little bit annoyed we're not in League B, because I think if we were in League B, that would made it getting into the European Championships a little bit easier. And I think we'd have been able to continue that momentum. And I think that's something that I think as the conversation around the national team towards the end of the year starts to form, because England, Netherlands, Belgium, there is a chance that, you know, we could end up with nothing out of this Nations League. I hope it's not the case. And I genuinely believe that we've got the ability to get results against Belgium, to get something against Netherlands and England. But I think whenever the conversation starts talking about the national side towards the end of the year, it's worth remembering that the Scotland team that are in this Nations League are starting at the top, but they're not where, and I don't like doing the comparison, but I'm going to do it, not where Steve Clarke's side were in leagues, like having to make their way up the leagues. They are starting at the top because that's where we've been for the last kind of few years. So I think it's hugely exciting. I hope we beat the attendance record at Hamden in one of these games, because England, Netherlands, you're not going to get much bigger tickets than those in town. And the fact it's competitive games and there'll be stakes involved, yeah. I'm really excited for them. They're going to be incredibly tough, but I'm really excited that these are the games that we've got coming up and the challenges that they'll bring.
The thing that's annoying about the home games, though, Chris, unfortunately, they're on a Tuesday night, and they're on weeks where there's men's Champions Leagues, etc. And you've also got Celtic and possible Rangers in Champions League. That's also not the MSFA issue. That's this UEFA schedule, which is giving Scotland for some reason every Tuesday game. If you'd had a Friday game, I think there would have been a closer chance to that 10,000 mark that we had for the Republic of Ireland game. maybe
I'm not having that, John. I'm not having that. I think that's an excuse. I think this is something everybody needs to get away with.
Well, listen, I'll be there.
Oh, no, I know you'll be there. We'll all be there. But I think it's easy to always find a reason for something not happening.
That's true.
Why not? Why? There's absolutely no reason why a Scotland v England game at Hampden can't get more than 18,555 people. No, I'm not buying it. And if the people, if the reason for it because of Men's Champions League, well, like, okay, nobody's going to be in games in Bratislava or Turin or Madrid, or like, that's not going to stop somebody going to a game on a Tuesday night to see Scotland play England. Like, that wouldn't stop me. So I appreciate the sentiment of fixture schedules and how they clash, but no. Scotland, England in particular. No. That should be the biggest show in town that night in Scotland, and everybody should be at it for sure.
This might be a bit petty as well, but the costs maybe perhaps as well, not from a Scotland persuasion, but more from a Celtic and Rangers persuasion if they were in the Champions League. The costs would obviously appeal to a lot of the families and a lot of the kids out there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I totally agree. I think that has to be, if that game does not exceed 10,000 supporters at Hampden, then there's something seriously wrong. I think, you know, look at the crowds that we got, obviously, in the domestic season, last season at Parkhead, even at Ibrox. Even the last game of the season at Ibrox, Rangers were playing the same day, I'm sure they were at Ibrox, and were still, what was it, maybe 4,000, was it maybe at Ibrox, round about that figure?
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head, but round about that, wasn't it? Yeah.
And it was obviously Rangers men's were playing away through in Edinburgh, I think it was.
Playing Hibs,
that's right. So I think I agree, Chris. If people actually want to go to the women's game, they'll be at that game. And if we don't exceed the 10,000 supporters at Hampden, then there's something seriously wrong.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just annoying that Tuesday isn't the best fixture, but let's make it happen. And as you say, I mean, it's just the SFA's 150th anniversary. Market this to hell. And I'm sure they will.
I think the marketing will help because, as you've kind of alluded to just there, the Scotland England game, it's more or less a charity game, this 150th anniversary. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's more or less.
Yeah, the men's one, but not the women's one.
Yeah, I was just going to elaborate. The men's game, that's more a charity / friendly. Yeah, it's being billed as the 150th anniversary. When it's all fine and well, and it's, don't get me wrong, it's a strong rivalry between Scotland and England. But if they put, not similar, but if there's a different level of marketing, but done in the right way, then it will entice the extra fan to come. And that can only be a positive for our country in our game.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I will ask before we go as well, why on earth do UEFA/FIFA want to make qualification journeys extra complicated for the women's game? I mean, what is it? The top two in the Nations League go straight to Euros, plus the host Switzerland, which is then leaving, what, seven spaces?
I'll be honest with you, John. I am still recovering from trying to work out the playoff permutations for the World Cup. So I haven't even looked at what the UEFA Nations League means or how it's going to work or anything like that at all. I don't just know that, like, at some point, we're going to have to finish top of a group or like finish runner-up in a group somewhere along the line in the next 2 years to get to Euros. And when it comes a little bit closer to time, I'll probably try and figure it out.
It's just as difficult as the Women's Champions League. I think that's similar, yeah. Isn't it? That's a touchy subject to go on also. And that's a debate on its own. But yeah, you're right, John. I mean, I don't know who comes up with these crazy ideas, formations, and yeah, whatever it may be. But as you say, as long as we go out, obviously try and get maximum points each game play against, we know it's going to be extremely difficult, and then we'll have a good chance of qualifying.
Absolutely. And then in 2 years' time, we'll have Rachel Corsa, Caroline Weir lifting the European Championship trophy in Switzerland. That would just be ideal.
It'll be Euros 2024 and Euros 2025.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that would be the dream. We'll wait and see. But listen, Emma, Chris, and Dave, thank you very much for your time and for helping preview the SWPL season and National Chat as well. And for everyone else listening, I hope you enjoy the upcoming season, which begins on the 13th of August. And if you can, get along to as many games as you can because they are extra competitive and they are very entertaining.